blood and thunder and going in for tackles that you wouldn't normally go in for.
I try and like want them to go in, like my wife's English, the kids are having, but I just can't.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at getsetgo.ie.
The Off the Ball Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball here on News Talk. John Duggan sitting in for Joe Malloy until 7. Now time to talk football, primarily the Euros, with the former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend Mark Lawrenson and the soccer correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, Philip Quinn. Football and Off the Ball, Paddy Powers, Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. You can listen to us on News Talk, also watch us on the digital and social channels for Off the Ball, for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. Just to kind of keep up to date with some sports news, Ireland lead Hong Kong 12-0 midway through the first half of their semi-final at the Sevens, and France await the winners in the final. Wales making three changes from Wednesday's 2-0 win over Turkey. This match kicks off against Italy in Rome at 5. The three players who dropped to the bench, those who are one booking away from a suspension, Ben Davies, Chris Meppham and Kiefer Moore. So Chris Gunter and Ethan Ampadu come in to what looks like a back three. Nico Williams was recalled at left wing back. Eight changes for Italy, the only players who remain from the Switzerland win. Goalkeeper Gianluigi Donnarumma, Bonucci and midfielder Jorginho. So that is the team news for Wales against Italy in Rome at 5. The other match is Switzerland against Turkey in Baku, also at 5 o'clock. Mark and Philip, how are we doing?
Good, thanks.
Right, John. Good to be on with Laro. Good to be on with a real legend.
Ah, yeah.
It's a long time since I've seen you, Quinner.
Yeah, it's a long time, Mark, since we teed up. I remember we teed up in a defensive partnership in 1994 before the World Cup. We had a media match, and right. you flattered me by saying that I might have been a half decent junior footballer, which I still regard that as one of the highlights of my career.
Yeah, but Quinner, for me, junior was about when you were 6 years old, not when you're any older.
Oh, good stuff. Good memories, lads. Good memories.
Yeah, they were good days, John.
Absolutely. Are Wales going to make it a good tournament for themselves? Laro, 2016, it seems to be coming back a bit after what happened the other night in Baku.
Well, they just got everything together, haven't they? And I think the fact that probably, I mean, I didn't really fancy them at all, John, to be quite honest with you. When you look at the two best players, lack of form and injuries, and I never thought they'd actually perform the way that they have done. So they've got this, they remind me of us a few years ago in these tournaments, where you get a good win, or obviously in their case they've got a draw and a late equaliser, and all of a sudden everybody starts to believe. I think the performances have been outstanding, although there's only been two. I don't fancy them today, to be honest with you, even though that the Italians have made loads of chances. So but they'll still get through, so it's great. And you know, knockout football, who knows? I mean, the fella Bale, all of a sudden, looks the player that he was 3 or 4 years ago. So he's obviously absolutely loving it, isn't he?
Yeah, Philip, Bale and Ramsey getting at the vintage wine, aren't they?
Oh, they are, yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking there, like, it's 5 years ago since Wales, I think, got to the semi-finals of the European Championships. Mm-hmm. They were key players then, and they had a little dip. We played them in the World Cup, and like, we beat Wales in Cardiff at the end of 2017 in the World Cup to get to the playoffs, and we faltered there. But they've regrouped and gone again. And you have to say, you kind of look where they are now, and you kind of think, as Laro says, Ireland, okay, we don't have a Gareth Bale. We maybe not have an Aaron Ramsey, but we shouldn't be too far off where Wales are. And they've been successful so far, I think. And just thinking of this, you just called out the team lineups there, John. I was just thinking, there's echoes of actually Euro 2016. When we played Ireland, when Ireland played Italy in the last match, Italy made 8 changes. And we went to Lille, happened to win a game. And we did, and we got through to the last 16, the knockout. And Italy have been cautious again here. They've made their changes because they know they're in the last 16. And as Laro would know, Italy in tournament football, you can never underestimate them.
I think the other thing, John, Laro, yeah, as well is you know, you're only going to get to this stage or beyond this stage if you've got match winners. It's like you look at all the teams, and we know all the good teams because they've got guys who can just win you the game in a moment. And definitely with the two boys that Wales have got, they can do that. I mean, the performance and the pair of them in the last game was absolutely brilliant. So they created lots of chances, and they'll quite fancy themselves today.
The Italians, have they impressed you more than you would have expected before the tournament, Laro?
Yes. However, somebody, an Italian friend of mine, said, had I seen them before the tournament? And I said, no, I watch enough football without watching your lot. But he said, honestly, you want to see the way they play? It's so un-Italian. He said that they press. And he just said, honestly, they run miles. Every single person in that team, apart from the three centre-backs generally, because they just all stay in position. He said, they run miles. He said, and they got, you know, outstanding qualities. He just thought that maybe they'd struggle for goals. Well, he got that spectacularly wrong because he got six, haven't they, in two games. But, you know, it helps being at home. It helps being in Rome. But they've looked really, they've been one of the better watches of the competition.
Would you, as a Man City fan, Philip?
No.
Because I've just said it on.
Oh, you've outed him. John, you've outed him.
Now. Yeah. I was ashamed.
Yeah, no, it's already been put on the record, I think. Mancini, would you have seen those attributes, the way Italy are playing, from what he did at City? Obviously, they've a lot of financial support, but he still did win the Premier League after 44 years. And that's what I kind of feel about this tournament. Like, international management isn't always the place to go now, but you have a top club manager in there at Italy at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised with Mancini, because even at City, he was... wasn't always in control. And the famous match where City beat QPR in the last game of the season to win the league, there's been documentaries about that, and Mancini was all over the place at the sideline. You know, he's a very, very passionate person, and a very, very undistinguished Italian national career. He was more often out of the team, he'd rouse, he fell out with managers. So I'm a little bit surprised what he's done. But Mark just touched upon it there. In the build-up to it, they weren't one of the teams we were looking at, and yet... I think under Mancini, is it 28 games unbeaten?
29,
now?
Yeah.
So we should have been a little bit more aware of this. They breezed through the qualification process. And I agree, what has taken me aback is he's given them license to thrill. I mean, himself, Mancini was himself, and I see Vialli on the sideline. It's good to see him, because he's had health problems and he's part of the backroom team. And maybe there's a little bit of, let's go for it. And the Italians over the years, and they were always the team I looked for in championship football. And I remember Mark famously playing against the Italians in 85 in Dublin, and he might tell you about the famous boots that went missing that night.
You know, and the kit.
That's a great story, and you might tell it, but they always have been a great team in tournaments. But they were always, we played them in Italia, we played them in 94, and we were there in 90 as well. We played them, they were sort of, you know, defensively minded. They didn't give much away. They gave away frees, all right, but the 1-0 to the Italians was like 1-0 to the Arsenal, and we've seen six goals so far. But what struck me most about them, and it's they've two guys called Berardi on the right, he was a left footed right winger, and they've got Locatelli in midfield. They both play for a small club, Sassuolo. They're near Bologna. They only became eighth in the Serie A. They're a tiny team, and they're punching above their weight in Serie A. They've come into this, and these two guys have been extraordinary. The goal they got the other night, Locatelli's pass, Mark, the left footer.
Yeah.
Right wing. He bamboozles the defender. He shows to go on the outside, goes inside, outside, pulls it back, and Locatelli has made the run to score. What a goal. That's so anti-Italian. I'm enjoying watching the Italians. I think they can go a long way.
Well, the thing about that, Phil, as well, Mancini's obviously picked form players. And it's probably, if you look at England, maybe Southgate's not, doing that with England. The other thing about Mancini as well is, why has he not been mentioned for the Tottenham job? It's the only manager that I know that's not had a mention for it.
That's an early dig from you, Mark. That's what that is.
Why is it an early dig? No, seriously, but why is it, John, why has he not been mentioned? Because Uncle Tom Cobley and all have all been in there. And he's doing a fabulous job, and he's managed in the Premier League. Well, we know what he's done in the Premier League, so that's a little bit of a strange on that.
But there, it goes back to that point, just on that point, Arlo, is the Premier League bigger than managing Italy?
Yeah. Well, put also, it this way, Phil, it's more money. Yeah.
Does he want to work as well with Fabio Paratici? This is the thing, you got its director of football now at Spurs. They've gone back to this continental model, and you have strong characters like Pochettino, Conte, potentially Mancini. Do they really want to work for director of football?
Well, yeah. I don't think that's an issue, because surely, look, the bottom line, John, is there'll be a list of players that Tottenham want, probably, you know, going out and also coming in, etc. If you're the manager and you don't fancy one of them, but the director of football says we're taking him, you don't have to play him, do you? You can just leave him on the bench. So, and obviously, the new guy coming in, he's got to go and get Tottenham some players that he thinks, looking at the money or lack of money that they've got relatively, he's going to try and get sort of the ones bubbling under the, you know, all the big names that we know, to get them a little bit cheaper and train them on. So I don't see any problem with that. I remember going to to Bloomfield Road to watch. It was they were playing Liverpool, Blackpool in the Premier League, and Mancini was obviously manager at City, and we were in like this private box rather than the director's box and stuff. And he came in a little bit late, and we'd had something to eat and stuff. I took my lad with me, and he came in anyway. So one of the waitresses just put this food in front of him, and Mancini looked at it, and he just went, "No." So she took that away. And then he spotted the bottle of red wine in the middle of the table, and I sort of pushed it over towards him, thinking he's going to go, "No." And he looked at it, he went, see, it disappeared in no time, by the way.
Yeah, he enjoyed a drink. So Paolo Rossi was in Dublin, and the very late great Paolo Rossi in 1985. What happened with the story Philip's talking about?
Well, I dislocated my shoulder for the first time ever. And if you remember, I mean, the place was full, and they were sat on the track, on the cinders, all the punters and all that kind of stuff. They took me into the dressing room, and the doc said to me, because the thing about dislocated shoulder, if you don't get it back in really, really quickly, it won't go in. You've got to have like a mini operation, anaesthetic and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, we couldn't get the shoulder back in. So the doc says, he says, "Right, we're going to have to go to hospital." I said, "Okay." So I've got my kit on. I've got my boots on and everything. So he said, "We'll have to walk back out with the crowd all down the sides to go and get the ambulance, because obviously everybody parked all over the place. And there was no kind of entry for the ambulance. He was parked about 250 yards up the road. So I was walking past all the punters and all that. You can imagine, can't you? The game's going on against Italy and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, get to the hospital and fine. He said, "Right, dislocated shoulder." So they took all my kit off. Literally, I just had my like undies on and stuff, my white undies. And when I woke up, everything had gone. My boot, my kit, the whole lot. And I remember the nurse coming in, and I just said, "Oh, do you know where my clothes are?" And she just sort of walked away and sort of giggled. And I said, "Well, where are they?" She said, "I'm sorry, I think they've disappeared," she said. So, but, and the thing is as well, we had to cut my shirt off because they couldn't get my arm over my head. So God knows where they went.
So the torn shirt somewhere in the world that you wore that night.
Unless John is a Man United fan or somebody who set fire to it, you just never know, dear.
Yeah, yeah. So where did you get a spare set of clothes somewhere then? Did the hospital give you some clothes?
They gave me this gown thing. So, and obviously, fortunately, back in the hotel, I had my civvies there. So that was all good.
Very good. Ireland, Italy in 1985. So Paolo Rossi, I think Marco Tardelli played as well. Philip, were you there?
Altobelli played. Altobelli might have scored. Paul McGrath played, but it was the real who's who of world football, because they'd won the World Cup in '82, and it was also, unfortunately, marked the end of Dalyman Park as a venue for sort of big time international football, because the ground was creaking at the seams. I remember, I think one of the corners had been taken, and you had to ask the Irish players asking the fans to move away from the for the upshot of it all was we the Irish football team moved to Lansdowne Road and now the Aviva. But that was a special night, and it shows you Irish people loved the Italian football. They were the World Cup champions and World Cup winners, and it was a huge game to be part of. But I felt sorry for Loro, because he missed most of it. And then when he came around, he'd no boots, no gear. He probably heard the result as well, that we went down 2-1. But
and no hope. Listen, also that's where I made my debut, Daily Mount.
I played
for Preston on the Saturday,
right.
And I made my debut the next. I flew over that night on Saturday with the referee, Bob Mathewson, I think, of the game on the Sunday against Poland. Flew back to Preston on the Monday and played on the Tuesday. Three games in four days.
And did you
win? We're hard then.
Oh, I'll tell you what, were we ever not?
The old days. The Swiss also play at 5 o'clock against Turkey. Vladimir Petkovic has written an open letter apologising to their fans who travelled to Rome to witness that defeat 3-0. I thought they played well against Wales. They should have won, I thought. Mbolo was lively enough. But will they have enough for Turkey, Mark?
Turkey look very, very ordinary, haven't they? I mean, didn't they take Shaqiri off Switzerland? I didn't see the game against Wales. Somebody told me that Shaqiri was sort of running the game for the Swiss, and then they took him off with, I don't know, 20 minutes to go, and obviously Wales got the late equaliser. So I've not really seen that much of them, and they've had some good results at major tournaments in terms of beating top teams. So I don't know. I probably think this might be. I think it's one to watch from behind the settee, to be honest with you.
What is going on with England, Mark?
Oh, how long have I got?
Probably under 40 minutes.
Well, the thing is, So the thing is that he doesn't trust his two centre backs really at the moment, because obviously Harry Maguire is not available, which is Southgate, of course. So he plays with these two holding midfield players. And against Croatia in the first game, that was fine because Phillips was just getting forward. And I mean, you know, the fella can run all day. And he was arguably England's best player on the day. Well, they just sat him and Rice. And you're kind of thinking, so basically, and by the way, the fullbacks hardly ever got forward. So he had six defensive-minded players. And in the end, a Mount was nowhere to be seen because the Scots did an absolutely fabulous job on him. And they're all moaning about Harry Kane. He never had a pass. Honestly, he never had a pass. He couldn't even come onto the ball and join in, drop deep or anything. And I just thought everybody knew the way that Scotland would be. I mean, think about Croatia. They're finished, aren't they? They're coming to the end. They're not good up front. And as good as Modric has been, he can only keep the ball now. He can't see a pass, and the forwards aren't great. And Lovren's another one as well who's had a great career, but it's come to the end. So they were ordinary. And of course, the English press being the English press, oh, we beat Croatia, they were great, they were this. And of course, then they get slaughtered against Scotland. But they just didn't start off against Scotland at 100 miles an hour, because you know that's the way that the Scots were going to be. This is, for most of us, probably the biggest game of their lives. And they're going to give everything. And they did, and they were good. And that's the thing with me. It's like England sort of saying, oh, well, it's only Scotland. We'll match them for 20 minutes and we'll all have a few tackles and all, and then we'll just steamroller over them. They never raised a gallop in the game. It was just really strange. Grealish came on and, you know, he did well and he holds the ball up and everything. He had nobody to pass to. So I think they'll get out of the group, obviously, because they got 4 points, but they were ordinary.
Okay, we got to take a break. We're going to come back after that with in just a couple of minutes' time with more discussion about England and Scotland and the rest of the Euros with Mark Lawrence and Philip Quinn on Off the Ball. Back after this. You are welcome back to Off the Ball here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 7, sitting in for Joe Molloy. We're speaking about the beautiful game of football with the former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend Mark Lawrence and the soccer correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, Philip Quinn. Our coverage, thanks to Paddy Power, Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. Group A of the European Championship concluding this evening, Italy playing Wales in Rome and Switzerland up against Turkey in Baku. Both matches kicking off at 5, Italy making 8 changes, having already qualified for the last 16. I'm not trying to be mean, Mark, to Gareth Southgate, but does he know what he's doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's just a little bit cautious. And I think sometimes as well, you can never underestimate how difficult it is managing England, because everybody's got a view, probably about 60 million people. And if he gets it right, he's a genius. And if he gets it wrong, he's an idiot. So probably somewhere in between, he's a good lad as well. I just think there's a little bit of a fear factor about England at the moment. It'll just be interesting in the last game as to the team that he picks. Because, you know, they've got 4 points, so they're going to go through. I think it's time to just go, you know what? Instead of playing an extra defender, let's play an extra attack-minded player and let's look, how we play and all those kind of things. Because, you know, generally, if you look at England, John, their best players are, you know, midfield players who kind of look forward and get forward and all the attacking strength they've got. So if you don't play to that, what is the point?
Who should come in then? Grealish, Sancho? How would you shake it up?
I think you've got to be careful not to make too many changes, because, you know, whichever team he picks, they won't have ever played together before. That's an absolute certainty. I think I'd put Grealish in. I think, you know, he deserves his chance now. And whether, you know, he replaces Foden or Sterling, not quite sure. And, I mean, I like this, the Bellingham kid. I think he's fab and he's fearless. And he can obviously go from midfield and get forward. So him or Sancho, one of the other. We keep hearing about these two lads, and they've done brilliant in the Bundesliga. And chuck one of them in. Give them a chance, because you never, ever know. But, you know, they won't be frightened. And that's the great thing about these young players with great ability. And especially if you played in Germany, because you're taught how to play football. And you're taught not just, you know, passing, movement, you know, he talked defensively, positions and the whole kind of thing. Chuck one of them in, because what's the worst thing that's going to happen?
Is it all too predictable, Philip, when it comes to England at the moment?
Well, over the years, John, we've seen England, you know, fail. They're built up to be successful, particularly by the British media, and then the boot goes in when it doesn't, when they fall short, as they tend to do. I mean, I think England probably are a semi-finalist team in the Euros and probably a quarter-finalist team in the World Cup. That's probably their standard. They have a great advantage in this tournament because, you know, Wembley, as it still stands, is going to host the semi-finals and the final.
Not if they're booing them.
There are, but, you know, mark by the point, they have 4 points. They're playing the Czechs. But all we need is a draw. Both teams could do a little Anschluss, a little sort of Austria, Germany, right, from the back of the day, get their 5th point, and away they go. And I'm just looking up, if England can runners up in their group, the runners up in their group play the runners up in Group B. They play, I think, the runners up in
the Sweden group, isn't it? Sweden, Spain group.
Yeah. So that group has been very, very flat so far. So, but interesting to hear what Mark's saying there about Bellingham and Sancho. And I, you know, watching the Germany game last night, and you know, we might come to Germany in due course, but they played two pushing on wing backs, full backs pushing on almost as wingers, Gosen and Kimmich, and. You know what? Maybe Bellingham and Sancho could do those roles. England have plenty of full-backs who could push forward. And I do agree that Harry Kane is not getting the service. I think it's too early to write off England yet.
Because
they almost have 1 foot in the last 16. And as Laura will tell you, this tournament hasn't really started yet. There's no big name on the way out, although we might come to the Germany group later on. But England have almost got 1 foot in the last 16, and they can probably go further than that.
John, the tournament only starts in the knockout. At the moment, everyone's just dancing around the handbags, aren't they? And everybody knows that. You just got to get through to the knockout. And then England, I think, are actually better in knockout football than this particular league basis. So I think the problem is as well, because you got to the semi-finals in the World Cup, and you know, they were built up so much. But you know what? They never beat anybody. As soon as they played a decent team or a good team in the World Cup, the Belgians beat them twice, didn't they? If my memory serves me right, and it certainly played the dog and duck in one of the games. Everybody goes mad. Yeah. Sorry?
They lost to Belgium and they beat Colombia and Sweden and then lost to Croatia in the semis, yeah.
But there you go.
The concern with England that like he changed the fullbacks and they didn't work, and that he doesn't seem to know his best team? And surely, like, Mancini knows his best team, Martinez knows his best team, Deschamps knows his best team, and they know the shape of the teams. With England, they still seem to be finding their way around it. Is that not a good concern?
Sometimes, John, you can have too many players. You can absolutely certainly have too many players. And if you know, if you look when we were in our comps, generally, we would nearly always, you know, but me as an ex-player and you two guys, we'd all nearly always pick the same team. And I mean, that's a massive difference. I just think Gareth Southgate's a little bit worried about letting some of the younger players in. I mean, he's already saying, you know, this is the youngest team that's ever played for England in a major tournament. Well, you know, get these other kids in as well, not generally together, but just go for it. And you know, we've seen teams kind of after the first game certainly is in a little bit of a predicament. They've suddenly gone, is the glass half full? Is it half empty? Well, you know, it's half full, and let's try and fill it with another performance. And I think they'll come good, England, but I think the problem is they get a knockout stage and they always have one outstanding performance and you think, wow. And then the next time they don't, you know, the next game they don't really turn up. And they've done that in most of the competitions I can ever remember being working and going to.
Go on, Philip.
I just like to see them just mix it up a little bit. I think in the last match, there was a lot too much passing in deep areas where they weren't hurting Scotland. And Croatia had certainly passed their best. So why not mix it up against the Czechs? Why not play a little bit more direct, because they need to get Harry Kane more on the ball. People pointed out that he hasn't had any touches, he hasn't had any shots, he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that. But he came into the championship. I think he scored 7 goals in his last 9 games in the Premier League. You know, the golden boot, lots of goals, lots of assists, 35 goals, all competitions. So he needs to get on the ball more. And I think why not just try a little ball over the top of the ball in the channel, just move it a bit forward, pick her from A to B, when it's right, when it's on, and get him involved. He gets one goal, he can then, you know, ignite others around him.
He says he's fit, Mark. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they'll know if he's not fit, John, because, you know, the way that medical sciences now, especially in sport, they, if he's carrying an injury, by the way, they would have said something, or somebody will have leaked it. So no, I think he is. But you know, the thing is, you kind of, so you'd say he's one of the best strikers in the world. I think we'd all agree at that. That's absolutely right. And he plays in this Tottenham team, and he has Son in and around him, who's obviously quick. In fact, he's lightning quick. He's quicker than you actually think. And you know, he's a very, very clever player. And you know, if you're going to play Harry Kane, try and get somebody, a la Son, who's a little bit like him, and maybe passing your team. I mean, you know, he's a match winner, and he's I don't know, he's not had a chance, has he? I think he had a header, and he was called offside in the first game, wasn't he? Or was it against Scotland?
No shots on target, yeah. But like Wayne Rooney's saying, play Calvert-Lewin with him in today's paper.
Play who?
Calvert-Lewin with him.
Yeah. You know, well, I think definitely somebody you can just interact with. And also, if you think about it, if you watch Scotland, three centre-backs, and they were generally all headed, kick-it centre-backs. So they just stuck to him like glue. And I mean, half the time when the balls are played up and they weren't particularly good for him, there was one, if not two of them, like all over him like a rash. So, you know, give your best player the best opportunity of being your best player.
What about the Scots, Philip? That was brilliant the other night. Can they carry that momentum now into the Croatia game and get through to the last 16, in your view?
Cool. They've given themselves a chance, I have to say. I mean, their supporters were terrific at Wembley. They drowned out the English supporters. We've always known that. The Tartan Army, fantastic. And they haven't been in a tournament for so long, and it really means so much to them. They're a limited group of players. You look at the players, look at the clubs that they're at, and there's no world beaters jumping out at you. They don't have a Bale. They don't have a Ramsey. To get out to the groups, get to the last 16 would be some achievement which is a fairly ordinary group of players. And I'm not, you know, in any way, Robertson is first class and McTominay is, they have got some good players.
Well, Gilmore as well now is the flavour of the day.
Sorry?
Gilmore is the flavour of the day.
Oh, yeah. Gilmore's growing. he's doing well. He had a good battle the other night. I think, touched upon this earlier, this Croatia team, I think they're gone. They've had their peak. Like a lot of teams from Yugoslavia, Serbs, Slovenia, Bosnia, they come up and they go back down again. Slovenia got to the European final some years ago, and I think they're in Division Z of the Nations League nowadays. And this Croatian team has just had its peak in Russia, and it's on the slide. And the Scots should take heart from that. They don't have an awful lot of goals in them. That's the one thing. And maybe they only need one goal, by the way. But I think, by and large, Steve Clarke has done a good job. He's got them where they're going into the last game with a chance of getting through, which might not have looked the case after the first game, where they had plenty of chances and they were undone by an outstanding goal, one of the great goals of the tournament. So they're in there, and I think most Scots fans would have taken that. Give us a chance going into game three, would have a chance of getting into the last 16, but they have to win because 2 points won't be enough.
I think, John, the other thing from Scotland's point of view is that performance would have drained them the other night. And, you know, it's whether they can go like that again, whether Steve Clarke can set up that kind of mindset. It reminds me a little bit of us in major tournaments without as good of players as us. But, you know, that the other night, every single player knew their job. I thought they were great. And, I mean, Didier Souness before the match, I don't know if you heard him, he was unbelievable because obviously banging the drum and everything for Scotland. I felt like playing. I felt like getting my boots on. And I don't know if you heard Ali McCoist, who was one of the co-commentators alongside Lee Dixon, and he mentioned it straight away. He said, crikey, listening to Graham, he said, I feel like I need to go and go into it. Go into Carlisle and invade it. He said, honestly, I'm ready. and that's the way that they were. And it's just, I think that's the biggest game of the competition, obviously. And I'm a little bit worried about Croatia, because I think Croatia will hide the ball from them for a long time without really looking like scoring.
Yeah, it just kind of dawned on me that Scotland have never actually qualified for a knockout stage of a major finals. I stand to be corrected, but I don't think they have, because you've all these glorious failures like the Holland game in 78, and they played well in the 1998 World Cup, and 74 they didn't lose a game, but they never reached a knockout stage.
Well, where was the one? Remember when Archie Gemmell scored?
Yeah, against the Dutch in 78. Yeah, 3-2, one win.
Was that knockout then?
Well, it was knockout in the group.
They had to win by two clear goals. They won. They beat Holland 3-2.
Okay.
But in fairness as well, John, you know, the World Cup and the European Championships, they were smaller events.
four teams
in terms of team numbers, and they've expanded now to 24, so they've got a better chance. Whereas the team tournament was much difficult.
So we've written them off then.
Has the Portugal bubble burst, Mark? A bit.
No, I don't think so. And you know, when I did this with you the other week, and we're previewing instead, I was just saying if you've got match winners in some positions and world class players, which Portugal have, I don't think you can ever write them off. I mean, they're good footballers, aren't they? I mean, they were just completely undone by Germany. But if you'd said to them after the first two games they'd have 3 points, I would probably argue that they might have taken that. And you can never, you know what Ronnie's like. I mean, he just, you know, doesn't really get involved in the games anymore. But if you get the ball in the box, he's on it. And yeah, I mean, you know, midfield's very, very good. They've just got really, really good players, but they just had a shocker against the Germans. And to be honest with you, the Germans in their first game against the French looked extremely ordinary. And we know that the results in the last 6 months to 12 months for Germany have been really, really poor. So maybe they've just got it right, you know, and now all of a sudden after that win, their performances will improve.
It might have been the case that the France-Germany game might have been a bit better than we thought, though, like when you look at it now. But Kai Havertz was interesting, Mark, in that he said that he was feeling the pressure when he went to Chelsea earlier in the season, big money move. And we're dealing with human beings here, but this guy, he finished really well. He was really influential in the Champions League final, obviously scored. And then yesterday he was brilliant. Like he is some prospect. He's already made it, but even into the future.
Absolutely. And, you know, not wishing to be stereotypical, German, so you know he'll be. I bet he's a good trainer. I bet he's a good lad. I bet, I'm not quite sure, but I bet his English is really, really good, because you know they will look at it thinking straight away, I need to take lessons, all those kind of things. I think he's obviously been helped by a new manager in Tuchel, who obviously can talk to him in the native tongue if necessary when it's a one to one. And Tuchel seems to me as a very good manager. And he's got fabulous ability. But so, look, it's really, really difficult when you get transferred in. It's, you know, and it's big, big money. And you know what the English newspapers are like. Oh, because you cost 60 of the 70 odd million, whatever it is, you're under pressure from day one. And we all seem to forget we've had COVID, and it's been an absolute nightmare. And I mean, you know, has he seen his family? Where are they? All those kind of things, which the man in the street never even thinks about. They just see this guy turns out and he misses a few chances and he costs 70 million and he's crap. Well, obviously he's not. And I think he's going to prove everybody wrong.
And Philip, you were impressed by that yesterday. It seems that they're back on the bike with love.
Yeah, Yogi looking to add the European Championships to the World Cup. I'm not so sure that I agree with Lauro and Portugal. I think they're vulnerable. I think they were undone, badly undone last night, badly exposed. Pepe's nearer 40 than 30.
he looks like you, Quinn.
He looks, and I'm nearer 60 than 50. He looks like a lot nearer. He looks, Diaz had a long, hard season, Lauro, at City. You know, and the thing that struck me about the game, and again, I'm not a professional manager, but they were being undone by the wing-backs. You know, Kimmich was bombing on the right side, and
Gosens.
I think he was involved in all four goals on the left side. And Santos, the Portuguese manager, didn't do anything to stop it. He just stayed with the sort of four central defenders, two central defenders, two full-backs. They all played narrow, and I kind of thought they were exposed. They got a goal on the counter-attack from, I think, their own corner. Ronaldo headed it, and he bombed forward, and he scored. And then they got the last goal, which didn't really matter. I think Portugal are in trouble. I think France will beat them, and that'll leave Portugal on 3 points. Will it be enough to get through? I'll leave you with this one on Portugal. They got through on 3 points in 2016 with three draws and went on to win the tournament. I think this is a huge test. I think France are a better team, and France will beat them. And then it's about the roll of the dice. Will the numbers fall their way?
Yeah, can't disagree.
53106, Mick has been, Dublin's been in touch. Where's all the Harry Kane adulation coming from? He didn't get a kick against Liverpool in the Champions League final. Dejan Lovren put him in his pocket against Croatia in the semi-final of the World Cup. He didn't play in either Champions League semi-finals. All big games and no impact, says Mick.
And he didn't get fed. I mean, what's he supposed to do? I mean, he's a top player. He really seriously is. It could well be transferred. So you know what kind of clubs that are going to come in for him, so that they're only the very, very best clubs. And it's not really a Harry Kane loving. It's just the fact that fella can't play without the ball. You know, Messi and all those, Ronaldo, if they don't have the ball, what on earth can they do without it? Not a lot.
Spain last night, Philip, 76% possession, but it doesn't mean a lot if you look a shadow of the team that won three championships in a row. They, to me, they just look completely lackluster.
Yeah, it's again cycles, you know. And Spain won't dip as far as other teams will dip. Their cycle won't be as deep. They'll come back again. But I was reading somewhere that they've tried 60 players since 2018. You know, that's, you know, at the top of an unsettled lineup. Luis Enrique is a good guy, but it's difficult. That glorious team that won back to back Euros and that won the World Cup from, you know, 08 to 2012. It's so hard to sustain that level. You know, mind you, that group hasn't really set the world alight. That was the group that Ireland were hoping to be in, and it's been a lot of draws and not much excitement, not many goals. And they probably should have won it tonight. They got two VAR decisions went their way, one for the goal and one for the penalty. At Galicia, they were very borderline, and then they missed the penalty. They missed the follow-up as well. They're in a bit of trouble, Spain. They should come through, but I don't see that any teams coming out of that group and being still there in the quarterfinal, maybe in the semi-final. I don't think that group is strong. Poland rely too much on Lewandowski. Slovakia and Sweden haven't really got many goals in them. But yeah, Enrique, he doesn't have the caliber that the team had in 2012. But he will expect it to get out of the group. And if they don't, you know, the Bulls will be running through Pamplona, you know, with his jersey on their horns, you know. So he's under a bit of pressure, all right, yeah.
Do you still foresee France as the favourites after what you've seen, Mark? They seem to be playing within themselves. I know they drew yesterday, but they had a host of chances.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think they've almost got two teams, John. Griezmann's starting to look very, very sharp. They could have been 3 or 4 up by half-time, couldn't they? And I know, you know, I think it was over 30 degrees in that stadium, so you've got to take that into account. And the fact that were the 70,000 Hungarians screaming at them as well. So they didn't have a particularly good day, but they've got themselves a point out of it. Just every time I watch them, you kind of look at them and you then compare all the other teams to them. And they just look probably with Italy, I would say. And I'm not sure about Belgium because I think defensively they've got all sorts of problems. And I think they will go out in the knockout stage because, you know, they won't be able to keep a clean sheet. But certainly the way the French are and the way that the Italians are, they just look like whether they can get all the way to the final because of the way the draw is, I'm not sure. I've not really looked at it, but they at the moment probably look the two best teams. But you know what it's like, knockout football, 0-0, really tight, somebody scrapes a goal, or of course we'll have penalties and everything. So I think all the fun and the excitement is yet to come on, yet to descend in this tournament.
Lots of talk in the papers about Pogba today, that he might, you know, he could run out the end of his contract. Look, it could be just tabloid stuff in the summer, but he does seem to be a different player at times when he plays, puts on that blue jersey.
Yeah, you'd have to ask him why. You know, we know he's got masses of ability. I mean, it's never ever been in question. But even over the course of the season with Manchester United, there hasn't been many occasions where you looked at him and thought, wow. Yes, he's been decent. Occasionally, he's been very good. But over the course of the season, he's probably been about 6 out of 10 and plays a little bit differently for the French. But, you know, he doesn't seem to be able to play in that particular position with Manchester United. And I think, I mean, all that stuff about running his contract down, that'll be from his agent, who's absolutely, well, leave it with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's whatever. He just obviously, you know, every time Pogba moves, the fella makes 10, 15 or 20 million. So you're bound to put loads of stuff in the newspaper. And I just think maybe he's just one of those actually that doesn't actually like playing in the Premier League. And, you know, it can happen.
Do you know what struck me, Laura, just on that subject? He seems to enjoy playing more with the blue jersey on his back. But
yeah,
just watching the players, that hasn't been a major tournament since 2018, hasn't been a Euro for 5 years. You really get the vibe from all the players and the fans how much international football is still relevant to them. You know, I know earlier I said to you, what's bigger, you know, Premier League?
Yeah.
And I get that the Premier League is where the money is week in, week out, but it still matters, this international football. And you can see Pogba in particular is one of those players. You can on a jersey, you know, he morphs into Superman, you know, with the blue jersey on his back. And others, I mean, that that reference you made to the crowd in Budapest, to see the 61,000 people ringing that stadium after a 1-1 draw against the French, that was uplifting, you know. It's one of the pluses of the tournament, and the players, I think, are buying into it. Some of the goal celebrations with players are more passionate and more combustible than they are if they score for their club.
Also the anthems. I mean, I always turn on 10 minutes to talk because I just love the anthems. Is there a better anthem than the Marseillaise? I don't think so.
I love the Italian one. That's almost as good.
That's up there, but I don't think it's quite as good, Phil. I'm not quite sure what the Italian one's about, but obviously the Marseillaise is about war and glory and gore and all those kind of stuff. And I just love, you know, if you see a team, just the way they sing the national anthem, it's almost like you want to say, God, I hope they win.
Andy Robertson.
The others, like, no, nobody sings or anything. Nobody knows the words. And the Marseillaise is definitely hairs up on your arms, by the way, boys. I'd love to be part of that. It would be fabulous.
And another thing I've been delighted with in this tournament so far, VAR is in the room, but I'm not noticing it.
Mm. Perfect. Got you. That's it. That's it, John. You summed it up. The VAR, refereeing, I think, on balance has been excellent. The officials have let play go. They players aren't taking chances. They're not rolling over and looking to see, am I getting a free kick? There's none of this finger wagging of players to the referees, which really annoys me. But book that player. I booked the player who's wagging the finger. And VAR, I did think Spain got just the break of it now last night. But the less VAR, the better. The less talk there is about officials, the better. Just players, get on with it, you know?
And that's don't you think, John, that's to do with COVID? Because if you watch the Premier League, and then, in the first couple of weeks of the Premier League with COVID, with no crowds, players dived a little bit. Then they suddenly thought, crikey, I look absolutely stupid. Because normally, if you know, you're at home and you think you've got a foul or a penalty and you dive and you've got 50,000 people screaming for it. And I think this is a follow-on from our Premier League, which is, you know, everybody's just going to get on with the game. The referees have actually refereed it differently as well. And I think that's all part of it. They've let loads of stuff go. And all of a sudden, on occasions, it even looks like a man's game sometimes, occasionally.
Well, it was a poor decision for that penalty that Spain hit the post with last night. That was a poor decision. Yeah. But I'd hope that the Premier League will learn from this because, you know, the geometry kits, the interminable delays around decision-making, fans are not going to accept that when they're back in the stadiums in the Premier League.
No, absolutely not. And why would you? I mean, the bar has obviously been set now. You know, and you know, as you say, generally VAR is—it's not been omnipresent. I mean, I don't know in the Premier League, but every time Premier League game goes on, we seem to have like 6, 7, 8 lots of VAR, and it delays the game, and it stops. You know, if you've got any kind of rhythm in the game as a team, it kind of stops you completely. So, long may it be this way. Hopefully.
I'll just let you know, folks, that Leona Maguire's birdie 2 of her first 3 holes in that LPGA final round event, the Mayer Classic in Michigan. Now 1 shot off the lead. Nelly Korda is still 20 under par, leading after 3 holes. But Leona Maguire, bidding to win her first LPGA Tour title, is 19 under par after 3 holes. And Ireland beat Hong Kong 28-5 in the semi-final of their Olympic repechage, a rugby sevens game in Monaco. They'll take on France in the final, the winner going to Tokyo, kick off just after 6:05 p.m. Rory McIlroy's got an 8:44 tee time on 3 under par going into the final round of the US Open, 2 shots off the lead. Also want to ask you, Philip, about, we were having a discussion on the Saturday panel and also in the Sunday paper review today about Ireland having realistic ambitions. To get to a Euros should be an expectation. If you look at the way Slovakia and Hungary have played, we wouldn't be out of place there.
No, and I've written this in the Daily Mail that we should be there. There's 24 teams in the European Championship Finals. There is no excuse for Ireland not being among those 24. And I know there's been a dilution of Irish players progressing to Premier League teams. We now have more clubs in the Championship. To me, the Championship is still an excellent standard. And we probably don't have the world-class players. And there's one on the screen there, opposite me there. And I don't mind him hearing that because he was world-class. And he had world-class players around, you know. We had McGrath, we had Brady, we had Roy Keane in a few years later. We don't have maybe that outstanding quality, but we should have enough about us within our ranks to be as organised and committed and competitive as a Slovakia, as a Czech Republic, as a Hungary, as a Scotland, and certainly the top 24. I kind of feel we missed it. We missed a chance here. We missed the trick. I'm not blaming people. I know there was pandemic, and I know Mick couldn't continue, and Stephen Kenny came in. I think had the national at the playoffs run their course last March as they should have done in the championships. You know, anyway, COVID got in the way. It's water. I can't change back time, but we should be there. World Cup more difficult to get to. I accept that. Only 13 European teams for the World Cup, and we're not in a good place there. It's going to require something very special in September. But the Euros, we should be there. And we better be there in Germany in 2024. The one good thing is we only have 3 years to wait. We've had 5 years since the last Euros. And I've enjoyed these Euros. I don't know. I mean, I made a little note there. You know, it was Platini's idea, this sort of quirky thing, pan-European 12, 13 cities. I didn't really buy into it, but I have to say it's been a success. I thought the Nations League sort of routes for smaller teams, again, was a bit sort of quirky. But when you see North Macedonia, the first tournament, Pandev, their oldest guy, scores a goal. I mean, what a lift that must have done. They'd be dancing in the streets of Skopje for weeks over that one. So little things like that have worked, I have to say. And I think it has been a success, and to see fans back as well. But you know what? Wouldn't it be so much better if the boys in Green were there and we had those couple of games in Dublin? They'd been a lot more livelier than the matches that were supposed to be here that were switched to St. Petersburg.
Have you enjoyed it, Mark?
John, I've got news for you.
What?
I spoke to somebody who managed to get his team, I think probably seventh in the Premier League, so you know what I'm talking about, who's done a little bit of work for UEFA in the last few days, and apparently the word from UEFA is they will never, ever, ever have another tournament like this with all these different places and countries and all that kind of stuff. So, sorry, Phil.
No, I'm not saying that. Well, I think I've enjoyed this, Mark, though. I'm not saying it's going to ever happen again. I don't think it will. But, you know, this was a one-off. This was 60 years after.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, it's a bit quirky, but I think it has worked. But we won't see it again.
No.
Have you enjoyed it, Mark?
Yeah, I think so far so good. I mean, I got to the stage with the Premier League in the kind of last quarter of the season that I was really picky which games I was watching, Phil, rather than actually going to. I was just very, very picky because I don't know. It was very, very strange, wasn't it? And it was surreal in many different ways. But I've watched as much as I can of this particular tournament. Maybe that's because there's nothing else on. Anyway, I think it was only yesterday or the day before I actually watched the cricket instead of the football, and that's quite unusual for me. So I have enjoyed it, and I do think this competition will get better. I really do.
Okay, Mark Lawrence and Philip Quinn, thanks so much for your time, and enjoy the matches at 5, and we'll speak soon.
Cheers.
Thanks, John. See you
later.
All the best.
Mark Lawrence there, former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend, and Philip Quinn, the football correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail. Speaking about the Euros, 53106, if you want to get in touch with a text here on Off the Ball, Sunday here on News Talk. We got Mario Rosenstock, the comedian, the podcaster, the radio legend, to talk about sport between 5 and 6 in our feature interview. That's coming up after 5. Don't go away.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick Start Car Insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.